chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make heaven in the middle of it. Rest make heaven in the middle. We are. Rest make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to have some really interesting clips to play and commentary that will follow it. But, I mean, this election, we've got Mike Lindell being interviewed by Alex. He's saying it was stolen again. So there's evidence, real live evidence of them adding electronically through the machines and so forth, adding votes. And in some cases, in one situation where they added too much, they took some back. But we'll follow this Jason, Smith review of what happened after the election on Fox. And then with Mike Lindell, and we'll just unfold it from there. But here we go with Jason Smith with some really interesting comments about how much debt and how much money that they've spent, the Democrats have spent, during this first nearly 2 years in office.
Let's welcome to the show House Budget Ranking Member Jason Smith. It's great to see you, sir. You know, one of the big issues for voters was inflation. It didn't end up being the top issue in certain races, right? We did learn that. But people are still suffering. And tomorrow's consumer price index is supposed to indicate that year over year we dropped slightly. 7.9% is the expectation, down from 8.2%. Having said that, that's still far too high for many Americans to feel comfortable. Do you think that this administration is going to pivot with respect to its policy at all to try to address those concerns? Because I listened to the president before, and I didn't really see anything in there that convinced me.
Well, they're going to have to, since the House has now flipped, or will be flipping in January, where the Republicans take over. The Republicans' priority is to make our economy stronger. That was a priority of the House of Representatives, and that's going to continue to be our priority. Folks have seen inflation rise 13.9% since Joe Biden's taken the oath of office, and you've seen one-party Democrat rule in Washington. In fact, I was talking to some folks the other day. Inflation has rose by 500% since Joe Biden's taken the oath of office. And when Jimmy Carter was in office over 40 years ago, inflation only rose at a pace of 200%. That tells you that we are worse off today than we were during the Jimmy Carter days.
Well, and that's why I was surprised by some of the outcomes last night, because people are suffering. Their food costs, they complain, are the worst, the highest, the thing that, you know, impacts them the most. And next would be gas prices. And after that would be housing. And these are, you know, everyday issues that people have to struggle with, hardworking Americans that are out there, maybe taking on a second job or a third job to make ends meet. Are you surprised that voters didn't put the economy first in a more aggressive way?
You know, politics and elections are always local. So it's local based on from state to state. You saw what happened in Florida, what happened in New York. I mean, Republicans picked up numerous seats in the state of New York. We picked up 4 in the state of Florida. So everything is regional. I'll tell you right now, working class Americans are struggling to put food on their table, clothes on their backs, and gasoline in their cars. It's a priority. It's a priority to numerous voters. So what happened yesterday has only happened 4 times in the last 75 years. Mm. And that is the House switching from Democrat to Republican control. So it was a big night. And the people of the United States spoke loud and clear. They wanted to retire Nancy Pelosi, and they did just that.
Right. And as we were saying earlier on another with a different guest, you know, the issue really becomes about being able to block legislation. And as long as one chamber can do that, this administration is going to have a very tough time getting anything done.
Well, Jackie, it's not about just blocking legislation. It's about making sure that this reckless spending stops. Just in the first 21 months of one-party Democrat rule in Washington, they have added more than $10 trillion of spending. Yeah. That's more than the first 196 years of all spending for our country. That will be stopped now since the Republicans take control of the House of Representatives.
And there are a lot of people out there that say, hey, that's a big win.
Huge win, and it will be good for the people trying to just afford food on their table, clothes on their backs, and gasoline on their cars.
Yeah, and we opened the segment talking about layoffs coming at Meta, but also other technology companies, and you've been hearing it trickle in. The expectation is that the Fed will continue to raise rates because inflation isn't coming down fast enough. We're going to head into some sort of a recession. Mortgage rates are high. How do you think 2023 is going to shape out for most Americans? How do you think they're going to be feeling?
You know, I'm really concerned. Americans are struggling. They've seen interest rates increase 6 times since March. Just to make a payment on a mortgage is almost doubled under this administration. Everything is harder for them to bear. And so it's going to be tough. But hopefully Republicans are on the way to help make a difference.
Congressman, great to see you. Jason Smith, good to see you tonight.
Was there cheating during this election, this midterms? Well, Mike Lindell says he has the evidence. And he had a lengthy interview with Alex. And here's a part of that. And I'm going to put up on the secrettruth.com site, click-off that will give you, a click-off right to listen to the complete interview that Mike Lindell had with Alex. But here we go with an excerpt from that interview.
Note we have here, we have the votes going up. I'm putting my cursor over it. Votes going, staying the same. And then we go from 326,000 votes down to 288,000 votes. So where'd they go? They're gone.
You can't go in reverse, everybody. These are the order. These votes are coming in through the Edison Report, which is one of the biggest monopolies in this country. Every single vote goes through New Jersey, and then it comes out to us.
I switched over while you were talking to the governor race in Pennsylvania, and you'll see it happened there, too.
So we have a 63,000. We have a 90,000 crime spike, another 90,000 crime spike, a 63,000 crime spike. And then they go, uh-oh, the whole world's going to know that Mastriano's getting, we're cheating by too much. So what do they do, everybody? Right there, point to the cursor. They took away 90,000 votes from the Democrat.
Yeah, if you look, it took the vote total back to where it had been way back here.
These are real-time crime spikes, machine manipulation. Look at that. See that Democrat go ding, up 150,000 votes because Herschel was taking the lead. So they just dumped a bunch of votes by computer in there. Everybody can understand that. That's something everybody can enjoy, real-time crime.
Yeah.
It's right there in front of you.
That's 100,000 votes that comes out of nowhere. That's just not real.
If you took that real spike out, that crime spike, Herschel would be up by 150,000 votes.
Yeah, it looks like about 100,000 vote spike there, if I'm reading that correctly. Out of nowhere, yes, that one. For Gretchen Whitmer, that has all the indications of a vote dump, of likely counterfeit ballots. Both of these look really, really strange, but in particular that one.
Because there was almost hardly any increase in the other.
Yeah, that's 22:23, so that's 10:23 p.m. Eastern time, if I'm reading that correctly.
Correct.
And so that is almost beyond belief.
Wow, look at this, everybody.
That's a million votes up and a million votes down. You know, a million votes here and a million votes there, and eventually it adds up to real, real election.
Can you explain this one?
Well, I can't really explain it. Yeah. I can't.
There is no explanation.
There is no explanation, but you see that you had an update at Eastern Time, 10:42, of about a million votes for Duckworth. And pretty much none for the other person. And then you see, it wasn't like it was something that came right back. It's like we kept on having a little more updates, and then suddenly there goes the million votes back down again.
that million person spike there.
All right, we're going to have more of these highlights in the hour, but I got to get to the man himself, Mike Lindell. Wow, incredible time to be alive. We only got 4 minutes to break. We'll come back. You'll have the floor. But just a snapshot, because you're the guy, you know, literally at the heart of the fight against these people. What is really going on, Mike Lindell?
Well, what they're doing is the same thing that they did in the 2020 election and in the primaries, by the way. What they do is they pull. That's why we told everybody to vote same day and don't vote early or with the mail and all this stuff. They're just pulling names. The computer just pulls names, and you get these injections of votes. So let's use the Oz race. With Fetterman, they did 590,000 vote injections. So as soon as it gets close, boom, boom. Now, once it's the day of votes, like we're seeing down in Arizona right now, all these day of votes come in, and those votes aren't as corrupted or might not be at all. But this is what's happening, and we have to get rid of the machines. And this time, though, the miracle, everybody, I want to tell everyone the miracle is that when I woke up on election day, I'm hearing from 32 states. Remember, I have people in 50 states, Alex, and all 50 states, we have a massive amount of people on the ground. And it was reported in 32 of the states, machine malfunctioning, just like Arizona, which made national news and international news, that they weren't even accepting ballots. People were getting there. They're going, oh, you've already voted. You pull out your little mail-in ballots. And no, I haven't. They called their sheriff's departments. So right away, awareness that was made around the world about these machines was like a divine intervention. That was a gift from God. And then now we're seeing what goes on inside the machines. And we overrun the algorithms, I believe, so far in at least 9 races. But obviously, we have all the evidence now of all the ones they stole. They decimated Colorado, Michigan, Pennsylvania. They just took it all. They weren't even shy about it this time around.
What's incredible is even Tucker Carlson, that hasn't really looked at the fraud, now he agrees with you and says they clearly stole it. So congratulations. Yeah. Nobody deserves more credit than you and your supporters and our supporters, because, Mike, you've been through hell, and you're a winner. You don't complain about it. But, buddy, you've been raided by the FBI. You've been attacked. You've been deplatformed. You have been savaged, but you seem stronger for it.
Yeah, well, it's my faith in God. And I'll tell you, Alex, we don't want to be Venezuela. And we got a perfect example right before this election of what they did to Brazil. 5.1 million votes were stolen from that great president, Bolsonaro. And you've seen all the millions of people out there going, this can't be, this can't be. But you know what? The mainstream media didn't even cover that. So you are right. I am so happy right now that Tucker and other news outlets actually started covering this. If they start covering the real-time crime and start covering these things, we're gonna get there a lot faster to this beautiful place we're going than we could ever think that we'd get there that fast.
All right, Mike Lindell, truly the man in the arena. I'm gonna come back and give you the floor to get into everything, because you are, again, absolutely on target. I think what Mike Lindell said earlier in the last segment here on the Alex Jones Show is so central. If we hadn't had all the poll watchers, and we hadn't had the massive resistance exposing the fraud, it would have been far worse, and we wouldn't even have a shot at the House or the Senate. But we're on the march. The vote stealers and their crime spikes are on the run. And so, Mike, you are the encyclopedia on this. I'm going to try for the rest of the hour to give you the floor to just go through what happened, what's happening currently, what you see coming next, and how we're going to peacefully expose this.
Well, we have breaking news just on break here. I got a text from our lawyers. I don't know if everybody knew out there, but there was a company CEO called Koenig out of Michigan that got charged with probably the biggest LARTA data breach in United States history, which was in our elections. And this is out of China, everybody, which I've been saying all along, that the CCP combined with the Uniparty, the globalists, and the deep state, this is the attack. This is who's attacking our country. The Democrat Party just loves to join on in. Now, let me tell you, they just dropped the charges against Koenig. They're against this CEO. It's disgusting. Now, you think that China isn't involved in our government? It's absolutely disgusting what they just happened. And it says that their office They took out a press release saying they didn't rely on True to Vote's data, but they did their own investigation. Lie. Remember, they put the True to Vote, Catherine and Greg, in jail. They put them in jail for almost, a week? This is what,
and that's important to add. You're getting SWAT team. People are being thrown in jail as you're exposing this and being vindicated. That's what people need to be praying for you and everybody that's supporting what you're doing, including InfoWars, because, folks, you want us to fight. We're doing it. Continue.
Yeah, you guys are awesome, everybody, with your support. So this is what we're up against. But I will tell you, some other lawsuits. There's over 45 lawsuits going on in this country right now that we're fighting for in every state, and we're adding to it today. We have one in Arizona. I'll give you Arizona here. We just appealed to deny. They denied Cochise County in Arizona. They told them they couldn't hand count the election. What? Why? Why would you come in there and say and get a ruling from a corrupt judge or something? I don't know. He ruled that you can't do a hand count. Well, we appealed that to the Arizona Supreme Court. We'll see what comes of that. Over in Wisconsin, let's move over to Wisconsin. There, you won't even believe this one. This is the complaint that's filed against the WEC. This is the Crooked Wisconsin Election Commission. Okay. The Crooked Wisconsin Election Commission, and there's been two-way communication between tabulators that goes out to an unofficial address. It's called WISNet.net. It goes to this foundation called WISNet, W-I-S-N, or W-I-S-C-net.net. And all of our stuff, all the Wisconsin elections and our stuff across the country is going to these guys. Then it goes out from there all over the place. So we put a complaint in there, a lawsuit in there, get to the bottom of it, and I just want everybody to know there's hope everywhere. And now that we're going to get the House, I believe we'll get the House and the Senate. I believe right now you got the stuff going on, which I can tell you about in a minute, an update on that. But to slow the destruction of our country, but in the meantime, the big smoking gun is getting rid of these electronic computers and voting machines. We have to get down to elections, not selections. There's just so much hope out there. But I know if you're in Michigan, or you woke up, you're in Michigan, Colorado, Pennsylvania, so many of them have lost hope now, Alex, because they were just decimated by the stolen election, by these elections that were stolen. But let me tell you, I'll give an example. Our cyber guys were watching. Do you know in Pennsylvania and with Georgia, the same attacks, some of the same IP addresses that did this in 2020 and in a couple of the primaries came from the same place. So we're getting deeper and deeper into that. There's just so much hope in this country right now. I'm happy. I want to say this to everybody too. Everyone goes, well, Mike, we didn't get the red wave we wanted. You guys, that's a miracle we didn't get that. We are so blessed that we didn't get that. And here's why. If we'd have got this big red wave, if I'd have been their markers, I'd have said, don't do anything stupid with the machines. Let's let this go, and we can take the country later. They're on to us. If it had been a big red wave, you know what they would have said to people like me? They would have said, Mike, it's okay to have all these mail-in ballots from the China virus and all this garbage for 2 months of early voting like my home state of Minnesota. Mike, it's all okay. The machines, look at the Republicans won. This isn't about that, everybody. The Uniparty was there. The CCP, this is what was taking our country. Over 50 countries have been taken by the machines. There's my own governor's race. Look at this. This is, he lives in my hometown, Scott Jensen. He right out of the gate, they just dumped it on Waltz. They gave him a 250,000 votes, extra votes. Here you go, Waltz. And look at that, all the way up. I mean, it's disgusting. They stole it, you know, and this went on across our country. This is machine manipulation, everybody, and computers. We cannot have computers. We're the apex in history. We get one chance for our freedoms to be back and to save our country.
It appears that the same thing that happened in 2020 happened in the midterms in 2022. We're going to see how Mike Lindell handles this from now on. He got stonewalled from the system because they were all actually organized to get rid of Trump. Both the RINOs and the Democrats didn't want Trump around. He wouldn't play ball with them on some key issues. So they got rid of him, and the neocons worked with the RINO neocons, worked with the Democrats to oust him and then to dismiss any court suits or lawsuits and stuff right at the beginning to where, and then they justified, well, there was no evidence. But there was a great deal of evidence that fraud was committed during the 2020 elections. And this time, I don't know how they're going to approach it, but they might get the same response from the court system as before. Now, coming up next is Roger Stone and Alex. And what's interesting about this, it appears that people like Ken Griffin and Paul Singer, both hedge fund operators, billionaires both, are funding DeSantis. And they're trying to oust Trump from the campaign trail again and put DeSantis in. This is why we believe that that Trump has been very, very, you know, confrontational, I should say, with DeSantis. And then this way they would get rid of Trump because he would no longer be the Republican candidate, but also they want to take back control of the Republican Party, of which they have lost it because of Trump's popularity within the Republican Party. So Roger Stone makes some very cogent assertions and sets out some really interesting ideas of what's going on.
Roger, how do we extricate ourselves as the populist bulwark trying to save this country by taking over the Republican Party? How do we not let the establishment distract us with a DeSantis Trump civil war and actually focus on getting rid of the neocon leadership of the House and Senate?
Well, first of all, we need to focus on trying to get control of one branch of government. We still don't know who won in this U.S. Senate race or the governorship in Arizona. We still don't know who won the U.S. Senate race in Nevada. We're going to a sudden death runoff, I think, in Georgia. Right now, what I'd like to see, in all honesty, is Governor DeSantis got $150 million in his federal PAC. How much is he sending to Herschel Walker? Donald Trump has got tens of millions of dollars in his federal PAC. How much is he sending to Herschel Walker?
That's what Ellen was saying earlier. We should see the Republicans all behind Herschel Walker right now. We're hearing almost nothing.
And meanwhile, Raphael Warnock, who's an extreme leftist, you remember him, the guy who ran over his wife with a car, but then accuses Herschel Walker of being mentally unbalanced. That guy's taken in $50 million since Election Day. $50 million. We need to focus on the short-term battle ahead. Right now, the House and the Senate are up for grabs. We need to stop fighting amongst ourselves and focus on that. At the same time, Trump's no fool. He sees Ben Shapiro, Paul Ryan, Jeb Bush, Frank Luntz, Meghan McCain, Rick Wilson. Suddenly they're all cheerleaders for Ron DeSantis.
Well, Alex, first of all, I have to say that everything President Trump said in his posts last night is true. However, we didn't know that with the party and the country was going to be in this place today. Actually, if you go back and watch our broadcasts here on InfoWars prior to the election, virtually everything I told you was going to happen has happened. We didn't have a red wave. We had a red drizzle. And you're absolutely right. The same manipulators of the elections in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, Arizona are up to the same exact tricks. I saw a terrific segment you did with Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell spent a lot of his own money to be able to show in real time these illicit ballot drops in which the votes in those states were manipulated. So at this moment, we don't know that there even is Republican control of the House, although it looks likely. And even if that is true, it'll be by a very slim majority. That gives rise to a strategy that I laid out on this show, in which a small subset of America First patriots, men and women who put country ahead of party, men and women
who are not going to give in to the inducements by would-be Speaker McCarthy for committee chairmanships or better office space or larger staff budgets to stand up for America. I think that there may be a coup attempt against the House leadership to replace it with leadership that would be more aggressive. I can get more specific about this, and I want to. Scott Perry from Pennsylvania, head of the Freedom Caucus, sent a list of demands to Kevin McCarthy prior to the election. In that list of demands were articles of impeachment against Joe Biden for various issues, including corruption, articles of impeachment against Kamala Harris for her failure to fulfill her responsibilities regarding sealing our southern border, investigations into Hunter Biden's laptop and all the data there, which is a window into massive corruption, including payoffs to the sitting vice president of the United States, Joe Biden, a real investigation into what happened on January 6th, not this fraudulent kabuki theater that the House Democrats put on, perhaps even an investigation into the actual origins of the Russian collusion hoax, which if John Durham did nothing else, he exposed that this was a corrupt cabal between the federal government under Barack Obama and the Clinton campaign. So McCarthy, expecting the luxury of a huge supermajority, ignored that letter, hasn't responded to it. Now McCarthy's speakership is actually in peril, Alex, exactly as we predicted on your show. A small handful of patriots here could change the course of history.
That's right. Meanwhile, you said that a few days ago. Now the New York Times, the Washington Post, today are all panicking, saying exactly what you said first, that because it's so close, it's going to give incredible power to the MTGs, to the Matt Gaetzes out there.
And that is, look, that is what we have to be praying for at this moment. In the meantime, it's clear to me that the corporate wing of the Republican Party, Rupert Murdoch, of course, with the Wall Street Journal, the New York Post, Fox News, in concert with billionaires like Ken Griffin, who recently said that the Republican Party needs to get back in alignment with the multinational corporate world, and admits to wanting to stop the populist movement. That's you and I they're talking about there, Alex. In conjunction with Paul Singer, another globalist billionaire, these are the people propping my governor, Ron DeSantis, up for a presidential bid. And I think Donald Trump has had enough of it.
No, you're right, because they're not just meeting with him. They're all getting behind DeSantis, which even if they're able to cut Trump out, they're going to then turn on DeSantis later. These neocons don't support Republicans. They only fund them early to control them. Owen, amazing points Roger Stone's making. You got any questions or comments for Roger?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would just say I think Roger is spot on. You're seeing kind of the corporate media conservative establishment, tee the ball up or lob the ball up for eventually, I think they're hoping Mitch McConnell, Kevin McCarthy, Ron McDaniel will come out against Trump or even the voters. Now, I don't see that necessarily happening. The only person that can separate Trump from his supporters is Trump himself. And with some of these, what people view as egomaniacal diatribes aimed at other Republicans on his True Social account, that might be what's doing it. So he is taking the bait. But right now, it's the corporate press that are trying to push this message of let's get Trump out. And why haven't we heard from Kevin McCarthy or Mitch McConnell or Ronna McDaniel this week? Because they're hiding and they're hoping that Trump takes the bait or that the voters take the bait that the corporate press is putting out there to start this feud between Trump and DeSantis as we're now going to be quickly entering the presidential race period. It feels like we're already in it just days after the election. But let's be clear about something here. Let's be clear about something. The Republicans used Donald Trump for the last 2 years. Every email they sent out for fundraising mentioned Donald Trump. They begged Donald Trump to do rallies for Republicans, which he did and got massive turnout. That would not have happened if Donald Trump didn't do any of that.
Sure, absolutely. So they're blaming him for their failure and not funding races right. And that's very, very clear. My question is to Roger Stone and then to you when we come back. Roger, how do we extricate ourselves as the populist bulwark trying to save this country by taking over the Republican Party. How do we not let the establishment distract us with a DeSantis-Trump civil war and actually focus on getting rid of the neocon leadership of the House and Senate?
Well, first of all, we need to focus on trying to get control of one branch of government. We still don't know who won in this U.S. Senate race or the governorship in Arizona. We still don't know who won the U.S. Senate race in Nevada. We're going to a sudden death runoff, I think, in Georgia. Right now, what I'd like to see, in all honesty, is Governor DeSantis has got $150 million in his federal PAC. How much is he sending to Herschel Walker? Donald Trump has got tens of millions of dollars in his federal PAC. How much is he sending to Herschel Walker?
That's what Owen was saying earlier. We should see the Republicans all behind Herschel Walker right now. We're hearing almost nothing.
And meanwhile, Raphael Warnock, who's an extreme leftist, you remember him, the guy who ran over his wife with a car, but then accuses Herschel Walker of being mentally unbalanced. That guy's taken in $50 million since Election Day. $50 million. We need to focus on the short-term battle ahead. Right now, the House and the Senate are up for grabs. We need to stop fighting amongst ourselves and focus on that. At the same time, Trump's no fool. He sees Ben Shapiro, Paul Ryan, Jeb Bush, Frank Luntz, Meghan McCain, Rick Wilson. Suddenly they're all cheerleaders for Ron DeSantis. What's that all about, Alex?
No, I agree. It doesn't look good. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
So what's happening is they're trying to create a civil war between Trump's people and DeSantis and get them at odds so they can't come together. If they let them come together, they'll be absolutely in control of most of the factions of the Republican Party. So they're trying to keep them apart and create a war, you could say, between these two factions and deny them a consolidation of which would actually oust the neocons and so forth. So this is what we're looking at now. Now, the last thing that I'm going to play, the next and last, two more clips here. One is about Eisenhower and his, he made a speech at the end of his second administration, and it was a farewell speech. And he talked about the military industrial complex, but he also said something about science being able to take over with high technology, and the elites of the technology would take over and dominate. And so here's a clip of that. I'm going to put up on this site his whole speech, the transcript and the audio, so you'll be able to hear both of those and see him speak. I'll probably put the video up, but you can hear and see him speaking this farewell speech. But also, I'll put up the transcript, which you can read precisely what he has to say about this technocracy. Now, Patrick Wood has written a book entitled Technocracy Rising, and he's way ahead. The technocracy movement was before World War II, but got sidelined and sidetracked because of World War II. So it never gained a popularity. But here's what Eisenhower had to say. And Alex is interviewing one of his writers that helped condense this book that he just recently published on the reset. So in his interview, they discussed this Eisenhower angle, which is excellent, and I just could not ignore it for this week's program. So here we go now.
We have a special guest here that helped me write The Great Reset and The War for the World, Kent Heckenlively. He's also written his own new book dealing with what really happened with COVID and more. But the 21-minute speech of Eisenhower in his farewell address in early 1961 before John F. Kennedy took over is something everybody should watch. It's online. Just type in full farewell address, President Dwight D. Eisenhower, and he talks about how powerful corporate interests with money were taking control of government grants through ARPA and then DARPA, and that was creating a technological elite in control of the military-industrial complex. And that's what Kent was getting into earlier, $120 billion per presidential election cycle versus $5 billion to elect the president, but the big pharma being funded by these special interests getting $120 billion, and that's how they've got control of society, and that's where the globalists are going with the medical tyranny takeover. So the tip of their spear is this technological elite using the biomedical system for control. Here it is.
Akin to and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industrial military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades. In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly. A steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government. Today, the solitary inventor, tinkering in his shop, has been overshadowed by task forces of scientists in laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the free university, historically the fountainhead of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research. Partly because of the huge costs involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. For every old blackboard, there are now hundreds of new electronic computers. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite. It is the task of statesmanship to mold, to balance, and to integrate these and other forces, new and old, within the principles of our democratic system.
Okay, so when that came out, the media immediately said military-industrial complex, which he then the next minute says is the subordinate of the technocrats. Mm-hmm. They call themselves technocrats. So if we don't understand this, we understand nothing. And so here's Eisenhower, pro-America, you know, not anti-establishment. He just didn't want monopolies controlling everybody. That's where we are, and that's what you're exposing in your book, and that's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, presidential takedown is nothing more than the metastasization of that cancer, okay? So everything that people have been saying, the critics have been saying for 30, 40, 50 years came to fruition in COVID-19. And so that's
It's coming out. It's takeover.
Yeah. It was.
It's offensive.
It was the takeover, and we need to fight to get our freedom back.
Just as Hitler invaded Russia, this is their Barbarossa.
Yeah, presidential takedown is the counter to this move. That's why it's so important that people get it, they read it, to understand this is not about Team Red or Team Blue. This is about Team Humanity.
And let's expand on that. He said a scientific technological elite will censor and control everybody else and create a monopoly of ideas, and that's the great danger. And now we're told science is not questioning, it's doing what we're told, exactly what Eisenhower warned of, the opposite of science.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
That's a smart guy.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, by the way, he wrote that speech. He wrote a speech. That's not some speechwriter.
If you read the biographies of Eisenhower, it is clear that he was a brilliant man.
Well, he had some of the people that did Manhattan Project and others coming to him and bossing him around at the end.
Yeah.
He was like, who do you think you are? I represent the voters.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that this is something for all Americans, because we like to believe that when we go and vote, then the bureaucracy of government responds to the will of that elected leader. And as Paul Alexander details, that is not what's happening. In fact, the government bureaucrats, they don't believe in we the people. Their frame of reference is we in the bureaucracy. And that is terrifying to if you're on the right, if you're on the left, if you're in the middle.
And if we can get this clip out, we have our own big audience, but we're captured here like in the Phantom Zone. If we can get that message to liberals, they might wake up. But they are literally in a mind control box. All right, great job helping me write the great research on the war for the world. InfoWarsStore.com. Get a signed copy as well. Help keep us on air. Can't wait to read your new book. Already going up the charts as a bestseller, even though it doesn't come out for another 3 days, 4 days. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you so much.
All right, great job. Look forward to working anymore. All right, another great patriot, Jay Dyer, is about to take over, but I'll just say this quickly.
See, this is very insightful. Dwight Eisenhower was a very brilliant person, not only a brilliant general, but a brilliant president. And he saw the problems, the future problems were looming far ahead of us. And today we're in the throes of this very, very iron grip of this health tyranny. And they did it with these vaccines and so forth. So that's what we're up against right now. And coming up next is Jay Dyer talking about Hollywood and those stars and celebrities being involved with many of the agencies, the CIA and all of these over the years. And especially he gives names and who they were involved with, some British intelligence agencies, American, and even some that were working for the Nazis at the time. But anyway, here's Jay Dyer setting out that, and then I will make some comments right now. Well, let me put it this way. There were people that worked for the OSS that were in Hollywood that were out there to approve or disapprove certain scripts for certain movies. They wanted the movies to reflect a very patriotic propaganda front. And so there were people out there, especially from Jacksonville, Florida, and other places, that worked for the OSS, Office of Strategic Services, which was the forerunner to the CIA. So anyway, I'll make notations of that on the site probably tomorrow when you come in and look at that. But tonight you can listen to this and get a good idea of what's going on. But here's Jay Dyer talking about all the Hollywood stars, many of the stars and what their connections were during war and during the Cold War. Here we go next with Jay Dyer.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis.
And you know,
I want to talk to you about the big news coming out about Kanye and his celebrity handler. We have, in the world of alternative media, for many, many years, people have speculated, people have theorized, people have talked about the possibility that, in fact, a lot of these celebrities are handled, that they might even have sort of deep state shadow government people in the background, maybe telling them what to do, what they can and can't do, maybe part of their contracts. And in the last year, we've seen two of the biggest celebrities out there put out information that, in fact, suggests that this is the case. Now, first, there was Britney Spears, who in the last, as we know, year and a half, maybe even 2 years, it's come out about her conservatorship and that she's kind of in this sort of prison situation. And a lot of people have speculated that her bizarre outbreaks of, you know, weird actions and all the stuff she does on her Instagram and perhaps even going back many years to the 2000s when she had that famous breakdown and she shaved her head and all this kind of stuff, that this had to do with her being under some kind of control, some kind of mind control. So this was speculated for a long time, but there wasn't hard evidence other than various researchers saying that, you know, they might be sent back to psych wards and mental institutes for reprogramming. And what do you know, we find out from Kanye's tweets that he shared allegedly from his personal trainer that there was this threat that he would be sent back to the psych ward and he would be drugged into Zombieland. And then we had other celebrities, you know, sort of chiming in and talking about this with Kanye, who then ended up soon passing away. I don't know the details of those of that passing away, but it's just odd the timing. It's odd what's going on with the celebrities. So today I want to give a little bit of a background on the history of the deep connections between the deep state and Hollywood celebrities. And this goes beyond just a trainer, you know, something like this. This has to do with many celebrities being recruited into spy work and to be assets. I'm not saying that Kanye is a spy or Britney Spears. I don't know that. I'm just pointing out that we do know in the cases of many past A-list celebrities that they were recruited to do espionage work. And this is a context for explaining and giving some insight into what might be going on in the case of Kanye, Britney, and other stars who have their careers destroyed after they say and divulge certain pieces of information that are not supposed to be out there, or how Hollywood is controlled. So don't go anywhere. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We're covering this murky, amazing backwater discussion of the history of Hollywood intelligence agencies spying, celebrity mind control. Now, this has been relegated, as we said, for many years to the kooky, crazy land, and it's just wild. It's out there. And yet, in the last year, we've had two of the biggest celebrities out there come out with claims that they have been mind controlled, that they have been put in to a state of being psychiatrically committed, to being drugged, forcibly drugged, perhaps even, and that this is in some way, controlling them and what they can and can't say and where they can and can't go, especially in the case of Britney Spears. So I know that, you know, we don't really, I think people are wising up to Hollywood and the music industry and how controlled this is. And it's not the most important thing, but the reason it does matter is that it demonstrates a long-term relationship between two seemingly disparate worlds that are actually connected at the hip. And so this is part of what prompted me to write two books on the history of Hollywood and, the shadow government connections and the history of spying and famous celebrities. So let's look at some of that, because it also applies to the music genre as well, right? It's not just that it's in Hollywood. Also, obviously, the music industry has similar connections in this way. And it also extends into the sports domain, professional sports. Now, I'm not that knowledgeable of the domain of professional sports, and I can't speak too much to that, but I do know about the history of Hollywood and the history of the music industry, and we are being vindicated. You know, this is something that people really make fun of for a long time. And this is one of the key reasons why I was a crazy tinfoil hat lunatic, was that I talked about celebrity handlers and mind control and all this kind of stuff. And it turns out it's pretty well vindicated. And why would that be? Why would we have this relationship? Well, if you remember in Edward Bernays' book, Propaganda, he says that we in this so-called democracy are controlled by an invisible group of people that most people have no idea. That's the first page of Propaganda by Edward Bernays. And one way, one of the most powerful ways that Bernays later points out in that book, is that Hollywood is one of the greatest engines of propaganda the world has ever known. And this was realized a long time ago. And so a lot of adept admin and psychological warfare guys and people in the OSS and all these different, wartime entities figured out that they could utilize stars and celebrities for propaganda, for product placement, for all these kinds of things that most people are probably familiar with. But maybe not a lot of people don't know that a lot of the celebrities, especially A-listers, were actually recruited into spying. In some of the famous cases, we go all the way back to, even the early Hollywood, the 1930s and 40s. It's pretty well documented that Errol Flynn, for example, was a spy who was more or less favorable to a tiny mustache man, Hitler himself. And as a result of the possibility of certain people in Hollywood favoring potentially the fascists or the Nazis, there were other people in Hollywood recruited to spy on other people in Hollywood. Cary Grant, for example. Cary Grant was asked by MI6 and the OSS to spy on potential Hitlerian allies in 30s, 40s Hollywood, and that included him informing on Errol Flynn. Director John Huston, for example, was famously a member of the OSS. If we think about Julia Child, the famous TV cook, she was a member of the OSS, the predecessor to the CIA. If we think about people like Marlene Dietrich, right, the famous actress, she has a long, wild history of sort of flip-flopping and being suspected by both sides of being a spy for both ally and Axis powers. And she offered to spy for the U.S., for the West, and they weren't that interested in her. And ironically, then the FBI began to investigate Marlene Dietrich. At the same time as the FBI was investigating her and was suspicious of her, she then was giving secrets to the OSS. So there's this amazing history of all of these famous A-listers. And you think, well, why would this be? This sounds crazy. Well, it's not crazy if you think about it, because what does a celebrity have? A celebrity has tremendous access to places that most people don't have access to. Celebrities are invited to galas and to dinners and to social events and to meet royalty and to meet presidents and you know, the richest people in the world. So it makes perfect sense that celebrities potentially would be high power recruitment subjects. If we look back to the time of the Cold War, we can note that Jimmy Stewart was actually looking at his history. He was kind of actually a badass. Jimmy Stewart was he flew a lot of combat missions. He was raised to the level eventually of two-star general, which is something that I don't think anybody else in Hollywood even came close to. And not only did he fly all these bombarding missions during World War II and afterwards, he remained for many, many decades a reserve member of the Air Force. And throughout that time, Jimmy Stewart worked very closely with the FBI. In fact, he even put out a whole movie about the FBI called The FBI Story. He's involved in a lot of propaganda footage from Laurel Canyon Studios, where he was up there sort of promoting and noting the FBI was this great entity that was going to save everybody from communism. And I'm not doubting his sincerity and courage. I'm sure Jimmy Stewart was really sincerely wanting to keep America free from communism and all that, and that's all noble. But it still is illustrative for, one of the biggest A-listers in Hollywood history, up there with Cary Grant, was so closely doing spying work for the FBI. The same with Walt Disney. Walt Disney was working very closely with the FBI throughout that entire, Cold War period. And this partly explains why Walt was able to get the land in Disneyland that he got. And he was actually given a lot of help from the CIA. The CIA is actually who helped Walt Disney get that land and set up Disney and all of that in Florida. And so there's a fascinating history with that. And again, I'm not knocking these people as if I'm saying that, oh, they're bad because, they're always recruited for the purpose of patriotism. And remember that, most people who go into Hollywood or who go into, especially at this time, they didn't know how the world really worked. They didn't know that there was all these, oligarchs and power players that were trying to manipulate people. They're just actors trying to get work, trying to get a job. And then they're usually recruited on the basis of patriotism. Don't you want to serve your country? Well, we might need you to inform on people. And again, this is well known in the history of Hollywood. Think of also of famous people like Coco Chanel, right? Coco Chanel is one of these people who was a famous celebrity from the modeling and perfume world and fashion world. And of course, she was, I think, pretty well documented to have been a spy who had Nazi sympathies. So all throughout Hollywood, we have all these people recruited, people famously involved in espionage, where this also is the character of Audrey Hepburn. Audrey Hepburn was actually involved in espionage work because I think for a time she was exiled and underwent a famine, I think in Belgium or somewhere at one point. And then this led her to inform and give information and pass secrets to the resistance during World War II against the Nazis. So even Audrey Hepburn had a role to play in espionage at that time. And a lot of this has only recently come out. So keep in mind that what was speculated and said to be the case, in the 90s, 2000s, 2010s by a lot of alternative researchers and theorists and even mainline historians has now been vindicated. This has all come out. Much more on the flip side. Don't go anywhere. This is the Alex Jones. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We're talking about this murky history of the relationship between Hollywood, celebrities, music industry, and intelligence and deep state handling and operations. And is this well documented? Do we have a good basis to say this? Is this just wild speculations and theories? Well, we've been through several of the most famous people in classic Hollywood. But what about outside of America? What about outside of Hollywood? Well, there's quite a few famous people that were also in other countries recruited into spy work. There's this character I didn't even know about this until fairly recently. There's a new movie that came out a few years ago. It's a foreign, I think it's a film from Norway or Swedish film. And this is about the A-lister Sweden. Her name was Sonja Wiegert. And Sonja Wiegert was the biggest celebrity out there in regard, probably in Europe maybe at the time. And her story is that at the time of World War II, she was recruited by her government to spy for the Allies against the Nazi high command. Now, that might sound like a noble thing to do, but the problem is that her government expected her to become basically a Nazi thought. She was supposed to sleep around with the high command. And she was cajoled into this, actually. She didn't really want to do this. She was happy being an actress. Who wouldn't want to be a A-list celebrity or whatever? And now you have to spy and sleep with these people. And, of course, she was more or less forced into this. I think her dad was arrested by the government to sort of cajole her into it because she didn't want to do this. And she got a really bad reputation. This pretty much ruined her film career. And, of course, all of her native country folk just thought she was, hoeing around with the Nazi high command, to be sassy and lascivious. And it's only recently come out, I guess now that a lot of this has been declassified, that she was forced into spy work. So we have to be careful, I think, when we, make judgments on a lot of the celebrities and these kinds, because a lot of these people are, number one, they're damaged. They might be brought up in abusive situations or homes that sold them into the machinery of celebrity stardom, because a lot of parents are also partly guilty for that stuff. And at the same time, we don't know what these people are being forced into doing. So we have to be careful, I think, in making these judgments, because Sonja Wiegert's a great example of somebody who, this really wasn't her fault. She was forced into this kind of stuff. And her case is fascinating and interesting, and it makes for a really good film. It's on, out there to rent. If you've never seen it, it's just called Spy, the story of Sonja Wiegert. I do recommend it. It's a very well-made movie that relates to what we're talking about. And she's not the only example of that. There's also in the Soviet Union, there was the famous actress, maybe not as famous as some of the other people, but she was known according to Hitler as one of the actresses of the Reich, and her name was Olga Chekhova. And Olga Chekhova was forced into espionage work, most likely. It's not 100%, but it seems that way, to spy for Stalin. So she was actually, I think, Russian by birth, but somehow made her way into the Hollywood scene and into, she was actually in one of Hitchcock's films. She was a leading lady in a Hitchcock film. And then she ended up spying, for Stalin, on Hitler. So, again, we find that this World War II time was especially rife with, espionage work on the part of Hollywood people. And, these are only the stories that have come out. I mean, there's probably dozens more people who were involved in this kind of work that we don't even know about, hasn't even been declassified, or hasn't even come out yet. In regard to, let me see if I've covered all the old people. Oh, well, we can't forget the
Christopher Lee.
All right, Christopher Lee was famously a Royal, I think Royal Air Force, RAF, assassin. And we don't know all of his missions, but he did eventually disclose this. It came out in the British press that, again, one of the most famous British actors of all time, Christopher Lee, Count Dooku, right, Saruman. Saruman was involved in basically assassinating people. And there's a funny clip on YouTube where he's talking to Peter Jackson when they're filming, and